Star Trek, our favorite frontier. These are the podcasts of Aaron and Polly, their ongoing mission to explore all things Trek, to seek out cool things and pick them apart, to boldly complain as no one's complained before.
And this is Paul.
Surprise, surprise, we're back in your feeds much earlier than we thought we'd be.
Yup.
Yeah.
We lied to you. Not intentionally.
Well, you know, if we tell you we're going to be right back, you can expect a 6-week break. If we tell you it's going to be 2-3 weeks before we talk to you again, we'll come back and talk to you a week later. That's just how it works. So I think what we're saying is that we are inherently unreliable.
You can't believe a thing I say.
I feel
if you're listening to this podcast, you probably know that. Unless this is your first episode.
Yeah.
In which now you know.
Yeah. If you're a longtime podcast listener or live with us, you know inherently unreliable.
Inherently unreliable.
That's right.
So, in fact, the one thing you can rely on is disappointment.
That's right. That's right. We seek to exceed your expectation of disappointment. You will be sorely disappointed.
You know, we'll revisit that point later.
Ooh. Well, you know, a long time topic on this podcast is the Paramount Plus app. And Paul, I don't know if you're watching this show on the Paramount Plus. Actually, I think it's the Prime that it's on, but I think it's made.
I'm watching mine on Prime Video. Yeah, Paramount Plus, the Paramount Plus channel on Prime Video. Yeah, I'm still on the fence about switching over and just doing everything through the Paramount Plus app.
Yeah, I'm getting mine through Prime as well. Okay. So I'm watching The Offer. Are you watching that at all?
Do you know? I'm not watching it yet. Yes, I am familiar. That is the show about the making of The Godfather.
Yeah, and it's fantastic. I mean, it's just a fantastic show. There's 4 episodes out. I've watched all 4. I am really, really digging it. In fact, coming soon, our all new The Offer podcast with Aaron and Polly.
Oh, okay.
Coming hot on the heels of our award winning and record breaking episode, podcast, Jellystone with Aaron and Polly.
Right. So you're gonna be waiting a while on that one.
So it got me, it's about the making of The Godfather, and it got me going last night after I finished episode 4 going, dang, it makes me want to watch The Godfather. And so I go into the app and I search The Godfather, and up come all these different options for me to watch The Godfather. And like the top 5 selections are all you pay a fee to watch them. And like, you gotta be kidding me. This is a Paramount property. I subscribe to Paramount Plus. There is a show right now that they're making called The Offer about the making of The Godfather. Are you going to tell me that The Godfather is not available for me to watch as part of my subscription in Paramount Plus? I boiled about this. And so I'm going through all these different options. And like I said, 5-6 items down, The Godfather, in parentheses, remastered, is available as part of your subscription. But if you didn't diligently go through all the different types of The Godfather out there, you could have very well have spent money to watch something that's actually bundled into your membership. I got super ticked last night. I'm like, this is a real problem with your app.
Yeah.
Because it seems dishonest. It seems like it's engineered to fuck you.
Well, I mean, that is the danger of doing your Prime through an app that is trying to make money for themselves, or doing your Paramount Plus through an app like Prime that's trying to make money for themselves.
I did not like that. I was rather cheesed by that. I'm just,
you know, I'm wondering at what point, like at what point do I actually switch over to the Paramount Plus app? And I will tell you, the only reason I have not as of yet is because, you know, I'm on through Prime. Now I can say this because it's not Netflix, but through Prime, you can share your account.
Right.
Right. Like they have the, you know, they have it so that you can share it in multiple households simultaneously. Mm-hmm. So I share Prime with my family. But I feel like if I went to the Paramount Plus, you know, okay, let's not do Paramount Plus through Prime. Let's do it through Paramount Plus. Then it's like, okay, now I've got to tell my family they've got to download another app, like, and I've got to download another app, and right. Everyone's got to download another app and remember another password. And that's just another excuse for my dad to call me and ask me what the password is. Love you, Dad. But, you know, it is one of those things that it's just it is just an extra burden. And now, don't get me wrong, this is first world problems.
Oh, yeah.
That is one of the reasons I haven't done it yet.
Well, you know, I like the idea of the Prime channel, you know. I enjoy that experience that I can just go to Prime to, you know, go. It's kind of one-stop shopping, having that channel embedded there. This is the first time that I've really felt like, okay, so this is engineered to screw me. Yeah, I felt targeted by the app and not in a good way. I was really angry about that last night because I legit almost spent the money to get it. And I'm like, I've got it on Blu-ray in the other room, but I'd have to get up.
And don't do that anymore.
And put a disc in the player. Who does that? It's just crazy.
I don't even have my. Oh, wait, I do have my Blu-ray player hooked up. I take that back. I did hook up my Blu-ray player. It has been used a sum total of one time in the last year because I wanted to watch the 4K edition of Krampus from Shout Factory. And Shout Factory's special edition movies do not come with digital copies.
Yeah.
So, bastards.
Boy, I hate that. I hate when it doesn't come with a digital copy. I just bought the Battlestar Galactica original series Blu-ray set. Because I don't have an HD streaming option right now in the services that I have. And, you know, I really like those original episodes. Plus, it also bakes in the Galactica 1980 that was so awful, but is just, it's fun to hate watch. So, I just bought those.
It's usually when you see, like you said, a remastered or a special edition of something classic, like a Shout Factory or some type of that thing, you know, and I'm big into the horror movies and the old sci-fi movies. So they'll be like, oh, you know, the 4K edition of Life Force.
Yeah.
Never before seen footage. I love Life Force.
Life Force is a great movie. I love that movie.
It's Life Force with Aaron and Pauly. Now that one, I can get behind.
Coming soon to iomgeek.com.
But, you know, they don't come with the digital copies. And it's – I get why. You know, they're purchasing the rights for a Blu-ray release. You know, they are not the original makers of the movies. They are not the original distributors. They are, you know, specifically getting the rights to do a collector's edition. But damn it. That digital copy – that is the only reason I actually probably even still own a Blu-ray player.
Well, and that's the hard thing about I tend to buy soundtracks from La La Records.
That's a good example.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know the problem is that they can't engineer the streaming rights for that stuff, the digital files, and so you know you're buying I'm buying a disc, and let me tell you how my life is not engineered for disc. I mean, the only disc players that I have in the house are my Blu-rays. You know, and running it through there, or my I've got a Blu-ray drive on my computer that I can rip from, and that's what I do. But you know that it really doesn't lend itself to how I listen to music anymore.
No, because you don't even my last two cars, mm-hmm. I think. Yeah.
Don't come.
Have not even come with the CD player. Yeah,
mine doesn't either.
Yeah, I remember the days of going to Sam Goody. Uh-huh. Or Musicland or Planet Music, getting that new release on opening day. And, you know, I've always been a big fan of movie scores.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'd get that movie score. Sometimes I'd get, you know, back in the 90s where you had a movie with a rockin' soundtrack and also a score,
mm-hmm.
like The Crow or something.
Right, right.
You know, you'd get both and you could listen to both in your CD player on the way home. No, not anymore. Flipping through your CD book.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's terrible is what it is.
Old guy problems with Aaron and Polly.
Old guy first world problems.
That's yeah, old guy first world problems. What do you mean I have to get up and get the Blu-ray from the next room?
I'm going to have to go into a whole other room.
I have to open up another app?
Yeah. Yeah. I have to load another app? What do you mean I've got to go to the app store? Hate that stuff. Well, hey, last time we talked, I was reading Star Trek Coda Book 3, Oblivion's Gate by Mr. David Mack. And I finished it this week. And it was better than the other two books. You know, I said that.
That was your opinion on it when we talked about it last week.
It is. There are some things, though, that really bugged me about it. Again, similar criticism as I had in the first two books. It was fatter than it needed to be. Mm-hmm. It really needed some editing. You know, you go into these books knowing that this is the effort to wrap up the novel universe to, you know, in favor of the, you know, new history of the future as, you know, depicted in Star Trek Picard. You know, kind of like the efforts, you know, where the old Star Wars legacy storylines went away. This is the similar kind of deal, and it's, you know, shuffling those characters off the stage. So you go into it knowing that all the characters are going to die. Every single one of these guys are going to die. And there's a lot of drama in the book about, no, I must protect person X. And I'm like, you guys all know you're going to die. I mean, because that's set up in the first book. There's no way we can win. The only thing we can do is protect the prime timeline. Because the conceit of the book is that at the end of First Contact, the Starfleet crew was not successful in defeating the Borg. And so the Borg, you know, overran part of the world. And so it created this branching timelines. And so that's what they're restoring all the way back to that period. And, you know, so everyone that you know or that was born after that event, they might not come back, right? You know, so all these new characters that were created for these books might not come back. And, you know, so it's like there's all this drama, but I've got to save him. You know, we've got to go back and do this. I'm like, what's the point? I don't understand that. Because you all know you're going to, I mean, they'll all say there is no way any of us survive this. All we can do is defend the prime timeline. I found that very frustrating and an invalid source of drama. I had a complaint about this book similar to that of Star Trek Generation, where, you know, I felt like Kirk dies like a bitch in Star Trek Generation. And Captain Sisko very much dies just a stupid death. In the book three, and I'm like, why would you do that? Why would you have him? Why would you have him die because of his mistake? You know, I just bugged the hell out of me. Captain Sisko is a character who needs to go out taking people down, right? You know, he should have been, you know, murdering Borg, you know, as he went, and that just wasn't the case. It was very frustrating. It was very frustrating. Overall, I liked the book. I'm glad I read it, but it was not a great piece of fiction.
That's a shame.
And like I said, it was way too. That series is way too long. I said before that I felt like books one and two could be combined to one book. I really feel like books one through three could be combined to one book.
That's a shame that when you spend the time reading three not short books.
Right, right.
And then you're disappointed. When you're disappointed in the second book, and yet you still continue to read the third book, and it continues to disappoint.
Well, you know, it's on me, right? That's on me. I
fool me once.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was not good. I really wish I could recommend.
We're on a, we talked about 13 episodes or 14 episodes, whatever. of Discovery
season four.
Yeah.
So, Paul, we were right to a point about, you know, Star Trek Picard season two. Wes Crusher does show up.
Yeah, for some reason.
Well, you know, he shows up. He walks onto the stage. You know, here he is, the Traveler. He walks up to Issa Briones and, you know, he reveals that, you know, he and his other Traveler friends are the make up the entity or the organization, the agency, I should say, that employs the supervisors, like Gary Seven from the original series and like Talum in Star Trek Picard Season 2. And he's hiring Isa Briones named Corey to, you know, be a supervisor. So, number one, I was happy to see, you know, the return of Wesley Crusher.
Yeah.
I was happy about that. What I wish had happened was that Will Wheaton had decided to actually act.
There in is his that performance. Person just like seemed very excited to have an acting job.
Other than just walking job. Other than just walking off the set of The Ready Room and just being, "Hi, I'm Will Wheaton and I'm very excited to be here today." I just, God, I'm like, "Oh, Will, come on. You couldn't have done a little acting?"
Yeah. I mean, that entire scene, first of all, you know, yes, it was like, "Oh, Will Wheaton," but then as soon as he opens his mouth, then he just seems like, "I'm very excited to be here."
Yeah. Hello, nerds.
Yeah, that was the entire scene. I also, while I appreciated how it tied into the rest of the story, I didn't quite understand why that character was chosen. Not Will Wheaton, but, you know,
Isa Briones.
Yeah. You know, why did the Travelers choose her to be a supervisor? It seems kind of out of left field for me, admittedly. Well, if anything, it seemed more like a way to shoehorn Will Wheaton in when he could have really been brought in story with Talon, I thought.
I feel like, number one, there was the revelation came out this weekend that, and we're recording this Sunday night on May 8th. The revelation came out over the weekend that Isa Briones will not be returning for season 3.
Yes, and only Rafi and Seven.
Yeah, and Will Wheaton revealed on his blog that he was not asked back for season 3. So that said, if this is just a one-off thing and, you know, a way to say farewell to Corey and to, you know, "Hey, look, you know, we invited Will Wheaton back for 5 minutes on the show." I really feel like this scene would have been much more effective as an after credit scene as opposed to embedded within the action of the show, you know, because, you know, Corey wasn't running from anything. She got that note on her iPad saying, "Hey, meet me at this. You know, if you want to find out what's really going on, meet me here." It would have been fine for that to be an after credit sequence. And I think as an after credit sequence, you would have walked away going, "Oh, that's kind of cool." Right.
Yeah.
I didn't catch who directed this episode, but I really wish they would have pushed Will Wheaton to actually deliver a performance. And I don't mean to, you know, to crap on the guy, because I know he's excited to be there and I've seen him in things that I've liked him in. I just don't feel like he brought it. He just was happy nerd to be on a Star Trek set. And it bugged me. I gotta say that. It really bugged me.
Yeah. I didn't love that scene as much as, you know, yes, of course it was cool to see Will Wheaton, especially knowing that I think you, to your point, had it been an after credit sequence, I probably would have been a little bit more okay with it.
Yeah.
But it does feel a little interesting that they really just threw it in to throw it in. Right.
Right. Like, that's exactly
to give the nerds what they want, because it's not going anywhere.
Right.
And I'm sorry. Go ahead.
It served no purpose in the story.
Yeah. And, you know, especially with what was revealed, you know, that you had mentioned, Isa Briones, Allison Pill, Santiago Cabrera,
and
Elnor.
Yeah.
You know, none of them are returning for the final season. And Santiago Cabrera has an in-story reason for not coming back.
Right.
The rest of them, it just kind of feels like, okay, you're good.
There's, honestly, you know, if you've resolved the story with the Borg, and they appear to have done that in this season, there's no reason to have Jurati back. She could show up in another Star Trek series on down the line. Same thing with Seven and Rafi. You know,
I would have preferred to get rid of them versus some of the other characters.
Well, it would not surprise me to see a Seven and Rafi, you know, spinoff series at some point, or see them show up in another property. You know, because we know Discovery's probably only got another season left to it. Next season is the last season for Picard, so they're gonna be looking for some new Star Trek content. Absolutely would not surprise me to see those characters. And I hope we get to see Elnor again, because I really like that guy.
It felt like season 2 didn't know what to do with Elnor.
Right. Well, and I feel like they wanted to give it some gravitas by killing him off. But you know, there was a lot of chatter at the end of season one that Elnor wouldn't be back at all, that, you know, that there were those who felt like the character didn't work. And I'm like, I don't know. I kind of dig Elnor. He's different. You know, he's fresh. Yeah. They have made a new character in, you know, modern Star Trek. And really, how frequently has that happened? So, you know, I was just like, I was happy with Elnor, still happy with Elnor. And I was happy to see his character resurrected at the end there. You know, that when Q reset the universe, we got Elnor back. I was happy about that. Though, you know, when the shields were falling on the Excelsior, I'm like, ooh, maybe we didn't get Elnor back for long.
Like, he's like, gotcha.
Yeah. So, you know, Paul and I were talking last time around saying, well, we really don't have a clue what's coming up in the season finale. I was not anticipating the big hug out with Q and Picard. That seems strange because
let's talk about that moment for a bit.
even though Q tells you, you know, you're important to me, it doesn't wipe away this horribly abusive relationship he's had with Picard for 30 years.
Yeah. And the people who have legitimately had lives ruined,
died
as a result of Q's shenanigans. Yeah. Like, Q is not a good god a good Q.
The first time we meet the Borg is because of Q, right?
Yeah.
You know, and all those people, remember when the Borg cube slides up next to the Enterprise and just starts carving it up like a Thanksgiving turkey and just pulling people out, and, you know, people are tumbling into space dying, you know, I don't think that's a hug-out situation with Q. We've completely ignored the fact that Q caused the murder and assimilation of countless people on the Enterprise, not to mention that he accelerated the contact with the Borg before the Federation was ready. Yeah. The guy's an awful, awful being. I'm just a little concerned about the, we're going to hug it out. You know,
and I get that Q is dying, which not really fully explained why he's dying, but okay, Q's dying, and maybe he's, you know, seeing the error of his ways. Clearly not, because, you know, a lot of horrible things still happened as a result of this test. But, you know, I did feel like, yeah. So at the end of the episode, right? You know, Picard and Q are talking to each other, and it's this last moment. Q's like, okay, we're gonna put everything right. You know, everyone's gonna go home. You did good. Blah blah blah. You know, I care about you, Picard. You know, you are one of my favorite humans. And then Picard goes, you know, he's like, yeah, you know, I don't want you to die alone the way I'm going to, right?
Right.
And then Picard walks up and hugs him, which is what we're talking about.
It's just weird.
And first of all, you know, Picard, you know, excuse me, Patrick Stewart, much shorter than John Delancey.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But in addition to that, you know, it is so awkward. I actually laughed at the moment. It felt disingenuous. It felt forced. And, you know, I don't expect, Mr. Fantastic to hug it out with Dr. Doom on his deathbed. Like, you know, these are horrible people who have done horrible things, who have essentially set about trying to ruin our lives.
Right.
And in that moment, you know, I can understand, you know, a head nod, maybe like Q, you know, you know, you won't
game
be alone.
Respect game.
Yeah, exactly. Game respects game. But the hug felt like, it felt silly. I mean, honestly, I will say, for what it's worth, the resolution of Star Trek Picard, and I'm very curious to hear your thoughts on it. The resolution of this season of Star Trek Picard felt silly to me. It felt silly to me, and it felt like, much like the comments I made as it relates to the season finale of Discovery, there were false stakes at play, because in the end, except Rio stayed in the past and, you know, died in a bar fight. You know, the stakes were artificially higher than the resolution ended up being.
I feel like I feel like there were things that were never explicitly stated in the writing that should have been, that would have made me feel a lot better about the type of story they were telling and why. I do agree. I feel, you know, Q, just like when we first meet the Borg in Next Generation, he manufactured the drama, right? This didn't have to be a thing, other than he wanted to help Picard, you know, a person that matters to him, overcome a childhood trauma that has kept him from really connecting with anyone in a meaningful romantic way.
So, Aaron, before you continue, I do want to summarize what you just said. I want to translate.
Oh, dear.
For our listeners.
Uh-huh.
Q just wanted to get Picard laid.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Is ultimately the point of this season. Like, I texted a friend of mine. I'm like, so Q just wanted to get Picard laid? Is that the way I'm supposed to take the last 8 episodes of the season? All right. Anyway, continue.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's the reason for all of the drama turns out to be fairly minor. And also, I'll go back to my original argument. I really feel like someone who's 120 years old has probably already addressed that issue. I mean, for him to have the big realization a couple of episodes ago when he was talking to his father, Gaius Baltar, and he says, oh, I guess I really never understood you at all. You know, I guess it's not really how I remembered it. I never really quite got you. And I'm like, you know, most people have that realization about their dad when they're in their 30s or 40s.
Yeah, you know, when they have gotten to an age where that moment, you know, of their, you know, their parental figure that they're trying to make peace with, when they've gotten to the age that, like, when they've gotten to your, you know, 30s, 40s, 50s, that's when you have the realization, like, oh, wow, like, I can now see things through their eyes. I understand why they did what they did.
And I would have felt a lot better about that trauma. And I know I've said this before as well. I'd have felt better about that trauma if somebody had said, oh, you know, it's something about his transition to being an android, right? Mm-hmm. That has caused this to bubble up, you know, and his android brain is having trouble addressing it. You know, flesh and bone Picard addressed this a long time ago, but there's something in his, you know, positronic synapses that are having trouble with this. Just give me that little bit of it, and I would have been happier.
Honestly, if we had addressed this during the time period of the Next Generation, mm-hmm. I wouldn't have had a problem with it. It's addressing it this long after.
Yeah. But, you know, I gotta say, I enjoyed season 2. I enjoyed it a whole lot more than I enjoyed season 1. I enjoyed season 2 on the whole. I liked the resolution with the Borg back on the bridge of the Stargazer. I was a little amused that here you've got a Fleet Admiral Picard, and he surrenders command of the Stargazer to someone who's not even in Starfleet. you know, I understand that's fan service. You know, yay, you know, Seven's a captain now. You know, she got field promoted to captain from being a civilian. I mean, that just really shouldn't happen, you know. And, you know, particularly when you've got an experienced field commander such as Jean-Luc Picard. But, you know, I like that he did have a little bit of growth, and I liked that he and Laris hook, you know, you don't really see where it's going to go, you know. In fact, I when I watched the end of it, I was like, they didn't even kiss, you know.
Yeah, you know, and I feel like that was an actor choice, and I feel like it was the wrong choice.
I agree. There should have – it didn't have to be him reaching inside her jacket or something, but I feel like a tender kiss might have been nice, you know. They didn't have to dry hump each other there.
Yeah. but there did need to be something more than just holding hands and looking at each other. For given the nature of this entire season, and apparently the fact that the actress who plays Laris is not returning.
Well, she's returning 3. For a couple of episodes, apparently.
Oh, yeah.
She's going to have an early checkout day. so I'm going to guess that maybe they're friendly and holding hands or something, and, you know, life happens after that. But you know, is frustrating to me, because we've, you know, tried to get Picard to this place through season 2, and for us not to get to explore that relationship kind of seems like a waste of time. Just saying.
Just putting it out there. Yeah, and for me, that's where I kind of struggled with the season finale. Now, overall, I did enjoy Picard season two.
Yeah.
World's better than Picard season one. Still a lot of problems. And for me, the majority of it was in the writing. There were so many weird nuances to the writing, unnecessary tangents, Picard hugging, and perhaps some of that, I was reading an article, and perhaps some of that is informed by Patrick Stewart's limited ability, right? Mm-hmm. He spent two episodes basically lying down and another episode basically in a chair in an 8-episode series. But I feel like there were definitely, just from the core concept of it, that Picard is still dealing with his mother committing suicide essentially 115 years after after it actually happened, or 110 years, give or take, after it happened. Yeah. And it's affected his love life for that long of his life. It was a hard to swallow pill. And the fact that ultimately, and when it all was said and done, to my earlier commentary, the stakes, they basically felt washed away to me, because in the end, they're all just sitting at a bar laughing and having a couple of drinks. And I'm like, okay, well, yeah, but like a lot of bad things happened.
Yeah. Horrible things happened. Yeah.
And like, even when they're describing Rios, and he's like, oh, how did Rios die? And Guinan's like, he died the way he loved. He got into a bar fight and died with a cigar in his mouth. I'm like, that's a horrible way to go out. that's not happy at all.
Yeah.
But it was just for me, there was definitely some unusual writing. We do get the same creative team going into season three, which is a concern of mine.
And they've already,
but it does seem.
Yeah, they've already shot all of season three with the next generation actors, the whole bit. So, they're actually sharing some season three information right now, which I find really interesting that they're doing that.
Yeah. Well, and apparently they have, Patrick Stewart has noted that he worked with the actors at different times. Now, I don't know if that's, if that means that we're not going to see, like, it feels like it would be in poor form to not have the casting, the cast all together for at least one episode.
Right.
If that's the case, that will be a poor decision on their part.
Yeah.
Hopefully he'll get moments with each one of them, kind of gathering up the crew, and we'll also get, some time with them all together, because it feels like if you're going to pull everyone back together, to not have them, share a bridge one more time, then you're doing a disservice to your fan base and to the storyline, really.
Well, and just earlier today, they released images of one of the new bridge sets that they're going to be using in Picard. Yeah. For season three. So,
okay. Interesting. Yeah. Cause what's its face is off the table.
Yeah.
The La Serena.
Yeah. La Serena. And, some fan on Twitter, whoever was posting it, I can't remember if it was Alex Kurtzman or whoever, but, they said, oh, is that the Stargazer? And I was like, nope. So apparently it's a different ship. Maybe it's the Enterprise F.
Oh.
Who knows? Yeah. Who knows?
You heard it here first, people.
There's a new Hallmark ornament regardless in your future. So, Paul, this weekend I did something I haven't done in more than 2 years. I went to actually see a movie in the theater.
Oh, snap.
Yeah. Yeah, and we'll talk more about the movie that I saw on our award-winning Funny Books podcast.
But we win an awful lot of awards.
Oh, yeah, we are sick with awards. You got to get a new shelf. But I saw on the big screen the Paramount Plus teaser for Strange New Worlds.
Ooh.
I got to tell you, it was gorgeous on the screen. And it had me sitting there going, I would really like for a Fathom event to run two episodes of Strange New Worlds, because, man alive, does its production value really just burst into life on the big screen. It was something to see. I was really excited about that.
Yeah, I can imagine. I have not seen the Strange New Worlds teaser or trailer on the big screen. I would love to. And yeah, I would love to see like the first two episodes, or
yeah,
it feels like, Yeah. Well, why didn't they do that?
Yeah, I need them to do that.
Yeah, if for the promotion that they're trying to do for Stranger Worlds and everything they're trying to do to bring this an audience in to this new show, feels like it would be a good idea. But, you know, I feel the same. I felt the same way about a lot of shows. Like, man, why didn't they just do a Fathom event showing the first episode on the big screen? I'm sure there's costs associated, you know, not just the cost of distribution of the files and, you know, reserving the theaters, but also, you know, probably a cost of marketing.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there is some science behind it doesn't make its money back because people will just watch it at home. Like that is for the hardcore fans only.
Right. Right. But it was certainly pretty. I also have to say, Paramount Plus finally bought a clue. Not about their app, but the branding of Star Trek prior to the episode streaming.
Noticed that the little Marvel thing or Star Wars and now Star Trek.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like, finally, how many new series in the Star Trek universe are you running that you have not branded the front end of? And I liked it. I think it's a jazzy little, fun little graphic they've got there. I was like, that's cool. I like it. Now, hey, Paramount Plus, go create a Star Trek hub on your fucking app.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, when I go into Disney Plus.
There might be, just not on the Prime channel.
Well, fix that.
Do it.
Because it drives me crazy when I go into Disney Plus, it's all there. You know, look, there's my Marvel. I don't have to look at any of the kiddie shows. You know, there's my Star Wars. I don't have to look at any of those other things over there. You know, I need them to do that. But, Paul.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to make a prediction. Are you ready? Are you ready?
I am ready.
I predict Star Trek Strange New Worlds will become, in rapid fashion, the most popular of the current era of Star Trek shows.
I think that's a fair assessment.
I gotta say, the return to episodic storytelling was delightful. They did more in this episode. I'm just going to cut right to it. They did more storytelling in episode one of Strange New Worlds season one, a pilot, if you will, than they did in the entire run of Discovery season four. I gotta tell you, it was a return to form. It was fantastic Star Trek storytelling, and there were a couple of things I was like, I wish they hadn't done that. But I gotta tell you, I thoroughly enjoyed this episode. Watched it twice.
I did too. Oh yeah, I mean, I only saw it once, and I will say I thoroughly enjoyed it. Now, it is imperfect.
Yeah.
There's a story beat. There are a couple of story beats in here that didn't quite land with me. But it got the feel right. Yeah. I would say this is a bit more akin to your Kelvinverse Trek in feel, right?
Particularly
it's got that
with,
kind of fun, that kind of action.
Yeah, with Nurse Chapel chasing the patient down the hallway. Absolutely, yeah. It felt like Star Trek 2009.
And you have Akiva Goldsman directed the episode, and wrote it.
Yeah.
So you do very much have that JJ feel to it. But I don't say that in a bad way because
I enjoyed that.
But I feel like that is it's bringing on that fun. That those character interactions, a bit of that overreaction that we got, in the J.J. Abrams, like you said, Nurse Chapel running down the hallway after the patient.
Yeah.
Like, that was kind of a silly action scene that wasn't necessary, but it's fun. It adds to to the drama.
Well, and it did actually develop and introduce characters, right? You got to see Uhura do something, right? Uhura does more in this episode than it probably took in, six or seven episodes of the original series to see her do, right?
Yeah.
And that was nice. I like the actor who's playing Uhura. I actually like the actor who's playing Chapel too, and Mbenga. And another thing that this has over Discovery, I know what people do on this show. I know who they are. I know their names.
Right.
You know,
yeah, they got a lot of those character interactions right.
Well, and one of the things that I think is key to classic Trek, and I'm just going to say it this way, successful Trek, is that you have to have a sense of place in the ship. Right. You got to have a sense of like where things are and who belongs in those spaces. And, for the longest time, where the hell is sickbay and who's actually in charge in sickbay? is there an engine room, you know, okay. over in Discovery? And, you know, we got to see the engine room. We got to see sick bay. We got to see the captain's quarters. We got to see the bridge. We got introduced to people. We caught their names. We got a little bit of their bios. I'm just like, this is so much more effective than what they have done in four seasons of Star Trek Discovery. I know that this is scratching my old man itch, right? My old man Star Trek nerd itch. But there is also enough modern elements in the storytelling that I think this is going to have a much more global appeal than what we've been getting in Discovery and the very nicheness of Picard. You know, because there is this huge gap in the way stories are told between Picard and Discovery. I think Strange New Worlds bridges that, at least in this first episode. And maybe I'm overselling it because I haven't seen the rest of the series.
There have been reviews. I think most reviewers have seen the first three or four episodes, mm-hmm. and people are really digging the show.
I'm
looking forward to more of it.
I have always been one of those people who doesn't believe that Vulcans only have sex once every 7 years. I liked what we got to see between Spock and T'Pring. I like that T'Pring's likable, right? You know, the only cut of T'Pring we ever saw was in the original series episode of Muck Time, and she is mercenary, but she's also a woman who, you know, promises were made and promises were not kept, and, you know, she's made some decisions. You know, she wants out of her marriage with the rather scandalous Spock. That's what we see in A Muck Time. I like who we see here because that tells me that maybe there's a journey we're going to get to experience. Because they went to the trouble of casting her and making her kind of a big deal. My guess is we're going to get to see more of her. This is one of those JJ elements, though, of Star Trek Strange New Worlds that really bugged me. And it's, you know, when Admiral April tells Captain Pike, hey, Enterprise is shipping out at 1600. Be on it. And so, you know, Pike reaches out to Spock. Hey, we're shipping out. Well, Spock is all the way the fuck over on Vulcan. You know, that's not just around the corner. But, you know, he beats Pike back to the ship. Pike, who had to shave his beard and hop on a shuttlecraft, and then for whatever reason, beams from the shuttlecraft to the Enterprise as opposed to docking. I mean, if you're going to beam up, why not just beam up from the planet?
Fair.
Because we do that. I don't understand. I was like, what?
Those are those touches that felt unnecessary. But again, it's all part of, you know, I think they're just trying to showcase some of the technology.
Yes.
Add some of the fun, even though it doesn't, in retrospect, make sense.
But, you know,
I will tell you where one of my biggest concerns is. I'm sorry. Maybe you were going to say something.
Well, I was just going to add, you know, tradition since Star Trek the Motion Picture has been the captain's tour, you know, the flyby tour, the beauty shot of the ship, right? You know, we've seen that in multiple original series cast films. We've seen it in Next Generation. You know, we just see it. It's part of what we do in Star Trek now. And it's always the captain, you know, getting his basement flooded, you know, looking at the ship, right?
Yeah.
That's always the mood. I loved the mood of Pike not even wanting to look at it. I mean, he's given Enterprise the side eye flying around it. I was like, that is such a cool take. I super dug that, how conflicted he is. Now, I don't want that to be the tone all the way through the series, but, you know, based on where he came from in Star Trek Discovery season 2, I like that we're living in that just a little bit, and then we kind of get out of it. I know it's going to come back from time to time, but
it's not too frequent. That is a concern of that.
I'm not interested in Melancholy Trek. I get quite enough of that in Picard and Discovery. What I really need is some Happy Fun Times Trek, which this show delivered, even though we did have Melancholy Pike for a little bit.
He kicked out of it. He had fun.
That's right. That's right.
But there were two moments. There were two Pike moments that I was concerned about. Well, one moment and one just kind of overarching thread. One, in the very first episode of your show, you can't have the captain go screw the prime directive.
Well, apparently you can.
But it feels like if it's It's nothing that can just be tossed out within the first episode of your show. Maybe it's not that prime of a directive. Yeah. That was one thing that I was like, come on, like, you know, figure out another way or something. But regardless, that was a minor thing. One of my more pressing concerns, and I think we've talked about it before, is that they are establishing a friendship between Pike and Spock that, to me, takes away from the friendship that Kirk had with Spock.
Well, because
Kirk was with Spock for such a long period of time that they became like brothers, and they became, you know, but then Pike was the only one who knew about his sister. It feels like they're trying to set up that they're best friends. But, you know, we kind of had that with Kirk and Spock, and it would be great if maybe Spock wasn't, like, the best friend in this show, too.
Well, I feel like there is a closeness there, but I think it's going to be – this is Aaron's perspective. I would think that it would be more mentor-mentee, and sometimes the student is teaching the master, right? But we know that – Spock was loyal enough to Pike to hijack the Enterprise, kidnap him, and take him to Talos IV, where, General Order 4 applied, where, you know, if you go to Talos IV, we got to kill you. We don't have a death penalty in the Federation except for this. So I feel like there is some wiggle room there, but I agree. It shouldn't be that they're brothers, as, you know, Jim and Spock become. But maybe it's more, you know, this is the guy I'm mentoring. And sometimes he has some wisdom, as he had this episode.
Yeah, and again, for me, it's less about establishing that they have a closeness. It's more about, as a viewer, seeing that, hey, Spock had a best friend before Kirk was
right.
But you know, because you felt like, as you watched the friendship with Spock unfold over the course of the original series and the movies, excuse me, that you felt like that was a first for Spock, Spock really understanding and being human and embracing, you know, this friendship and this brothership or brotherhood with Kirk. And I'm a little concerned that we're going to see that they've already established, you know, at the end of as one of the things that happened in this episode, Pike sends everyone back up to the Enterprise except him and Spock.
Right.
Just me and Spock will handle this. And for me, that felt very much like what we saw in, you know, JJ's Star Trek and things like that. That we see the Kirk and Spock show is turning into the Pike and Spock show. Again, in the end, there will be a lot, as long as the show is good, in a few episodes, I won't give a crap, because the quality will be good and the acting will be fun, and I'll be more enthralled in the story. For me, it takes away a little bit from if they continue down this thread, I feel like it might take a little bit away from the Kirk Spock friendship, at least in my eyes. But then again, you know, they've kind of already been screwing with that by introducing Spock's sister anyway.
Right.
So maybe I just need to let go of some of these things.
Well, you know, I know I had a couple of gripes earlier on, but the only real complaint that I had about this episode was that we didn't get to see near enough of Rebecca Romijn as Una number one. I know that will change in the coming episodes, but I really like the energy between her and Pike and between her and Spock. And to your point, you know, we don't really want to see, you know, a really close relationship between Spock and Pike. What I'd really like to see is a close relationship. Now, friendship. I'm not looking for romance.
Yeah, friendship between he and Riker Picard relationship.
Yeah.
Friendship, you know, in the same, but with,
But I want to see number one really be super tight with Pike. There's an energy that Rebecca Romijn and Anson Mount had on the set of Discovery that I really enjoyed. And there was a little bit of that between Majel Barrett and Jeffrey Hunter in The Cage. I want to see that. I want to see that kind of friction. I want to see that kind of friendship. I want to see that give and take. That's something I'm really interested in. And I got to tell you, my only concern, really deep concern ongoing in the show, is how many actors there are to serve.
Yeah,
it just seems like an awful lot of mouths to feed when you're trying to develop story and script. I really like the actor who plays Uhura. Really like the actor who plays M'Banga. I'm a little concerned about the Lieutenant Noonien Singh.
Yeah.
I mean, the hell. I'm not sure we need her.
We didn't even talk about, Soong pulling out a folder that said Project Khan.
Right, at the end of Picard.
Picard.
Yeah.
I rolled my eyes a bit at that.
Yeah.
Felt a little too on the nose. But yeah, but La'an, Noonien Singh. Yeah, there are a lot of characters. Now, that being said, La'an, Pike, Spock, a lot of them, Chapel, a lot of them had moments in the first episode. And so I felt enough of bits that I'm intrigued to see more. Like, I would like to see more with Lieutenant Ortegas. I think her presence on the bridge seems like a little bit fun pilot-y. Mm-hmm. a little less, usually the lieutenant who sits in that seat or the ensign that sits in that seat is so straight-laced, right? You think about the characters who have sat in that seat in most of these shows, it's very much, aye, Captain, or...
Yeah, they're buttoned up. Yeah.
But she seems to bring, a bit something different to that role. So I'm curious to see, where her character goes.
So, I was interested to see, or to learn, that this show was filmed in two parts. That they shot the first half of the show and then had COVID shut down. And they didn't get to shoot the second half of the pilot until the end of them shooting the end of the series or the end of the season.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. There's a huge break. In fact, when they started shooting, they hadn't finished building most of the sets. I find that really interesting. Because I didn't notice any breaks in it. I mean, there were certainly some things that I felt like could have been edited a little better. But I was very satisfied, very happy with this episode. Like I said, I watched it twice.
Yeah. I mean, it certainly for me wasn't it wasn't a perfect start, but it was definitely a start in the right direction.
And I got to tell you, one of the things that I really like, and you're going to make fun of me for this, I think that it is really telling that when we first see Captain Pike in this show, he's in his Montana cabin making breakfast, and you can tell he's kind of a swordsman, right? I mean, there is always a message to me when the guy is up doing something, fully clothed, doing his business, and the woman is back in bed, face down in the bed, clearly naked after having all the love made. And it's like he has worn her out and he's still got the energy, Paul. He's still, he can go in there and make up breakfast, make pancakes from scratch for crying out loud. I'm just saying. Pike, he is a renowned rodsman.
Rodsman.
Well, I dug it. I dug Strange New Worlds.
I'm looking forward to the next episode. And I think this is the only trick we're going to have. I guess after this one wraps up, Lower Decks will probably kick off again.
Yeah, I don't know when that's scheduled to happen. I think there's a break between Strange New Worlds and Lower Decks. I could be wrong. But hey, we want to know what you thought about Strange New Worlds or Picard or that Wesley Crusher. Give us a call, 972-763-5903. That number once again, 972-763-5903. And if we use your voicemail on the show, we might make you a supervisor.
Will Wheaton may show up at your house randomly.
He may just appear in your living room and hire you to be a supervisor and be very grateful to be in your living room. I'm so grateful to be in your living room here today.
So happy to have an acting job.
We love you, Will Wheaton.
Aaron loves you. You can also hit us up on social media, IOMGeek. Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter.
All right. Well, Paul, I think it's going to be like 9-11 weeks before we get back together again.
At least.
Yeah.
We'll see you guys at the end of the season.
Talk to y'all soon.
Bye.
Star Trek with Aaron and Polly is a production of IOMGeek.com.
Have a question or comment? Hailing frequencies are open at 972-763-5903. Tribble wrangling provided by Triskelion Trays, no troublesome tribbles. Mr. Aponte's wardrobe provided courtesy of Garrick's Clothiers, conveniently located on the promenade.